From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. This weekend's attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump was far from the first example of political violence in America. But in a country where nearly one-third of Americans believe political violence is justified, how will this weekend's shooting impact our country's future, both this election year and beyond? Here to talk about the implications of this violence and potentially some ways to prevent it is Dr. Garen Wintemute. He's the director of the California Firearm Violence Research Center based at UC Davis, where he's also a distinguished professor of emergency medicine. Dr. Wintemute, thank you for joining us again on Insight.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
You've conducted in-depth studies on political violence. What impact do you think this weekend's shooting will have on political violence this year and into the future?
There are several possibilities. Research suggests that the period of time shortly after such an act is at increased risk for another one, whether it's in retaliation or imitation. Big picture, longer term, I am frankly very hopeful. We'll probably get into the details, but what we are seeing in our research and others have seen is that the vast majority of Americans reject political violence, and this tragedy on over the weekend is, among other things, an opportunity to make that rejection really well known and help establish a climate at this time in this country of intolerance for violence.
Well, that is one really good piece of news, that the vast majority of Americans do reject political violence. You said there's an opportunity ahead of us. Tell me more what you mean about the opportunity.
Sure. Let me construct a case here. I'm a physician, as you know. I see violence as a health problem. And therefore, the decision to participate in violence as a decision about health behavior. We know a great deal about how to influence decisions on health behavior. We know that input from family and from friends and from social networks, be they in person or online, input from respected public leaders, elected officials, members of the clergy, whoever, makes a difference. And if that input in this country at this time is we do not accept violence, then good things will result. That's going to require some change because we've had public officials, elected officials, ironically, the victim of this weekend's shooting, repeatedly making statements that have the effect of normalizing violence. That rhetoric has to change.
Well, I don't want to lose sight of how that input from family and friends can make a positive difference. But Dr. Wintemute, before we get too far into this conversation, I want to talk about what's at stake when it comes to political violence. If our country heads down this path and this becomes more common, what are the consequences for America?
So there's a wide range. I'm just going to hit some highlights. So for me as an emergency medicine physician, one is, and I am talking about this to clinical colleagues, are we prepared for mass violence? Are we prepared to handle the casualties? Are we prepared to handle casualties where the patients are armed? The people who accompany them are armed. Armed opponents may accompany them. The hospital may become a scene of combat. I don't think that's going to happen, but we have to prepare for the possibility. Moving further down the line, it's possible that efforts to intimidate voters could shape the outcomes in highly contended states. At the worst case, something that nobody expects, it's possible that organized violence will be used to influence voting behavior or the vote count, that we would have to assign a new and bloodier meaning to the term battleground state. But in the longer run, it's almost impossible to even imagine the scope of things that would flow from us having a non-democratic transition of power from 2024 to 2025. Impact on our assessment of ourselves as a nation, impact on the world's assessment of us as a nation, impact on our place among the leading nations of the world. All of those things are potentially at risk here.
Well, and we don't have to look too far. I mean, there are countries not far from the United States where political violence has become commonplace. I mean, what happens to people's freedoms, to the approach, to any sort of attempt to have a democratic process in a country where that becomes common?
Yes. Those things and many others become difficult or impossible to achieve. Let me answer sort of a parallel question, which is, are we like those other countries, or are we becoming like those other countries? We do firearm violence research where I work, and we got interested in political violence in 2021 because we were seeing some very odd trends in firearm purchasing. And when we looked at the research in 2021, we were struck by a number of experts on political violence in other countries who had recently, using different methods, turned their research on the United States and uniformly had been struck by how far along the path we were to becoming like the other countries that these people were studying. It hasn't happened yet. It's not necessarily going to happen. The possibility is there. And I circle back to saying it's frankly up to all of us whether that possibility becomes reality or not.
Well, staying on that theme, or returning to that theme of this sort of input from others and how that can shape things, President Biden and several former presidents issued statements within hours of this weekend's shooting saying political violence has no place in America. So I'm wondering, what role can our elected leaders, past and present, play in helping either tamp down or potentially fuel violence?
Yes. First off, to amend that statement, sadly, political violence has had a place in the United States. We can all of us think of potential assassinations of presidents or would-be presidents or other elected officials, other public figures that we've lived through. It's here. It has no legitimate place in America, and it's our job, all of us, to make that legitimate place as small as possible. The role that former presidents, potentially future presidents, other elected officials, other trusted public leaders, whatever their specific background might be, can play is they help set the national tone. If elected officials, and this is important, on both sides of the aisle make the statement that political violence is unacceptable, things might change. We need to keep in mind that at the moment, and this isn't me talking, this is the Department of Homeland Security, the Secret Service, the National Threat Assessment Center, the people who do this for a living. The threat of political violence in the United States for the last decade or so, at least, has been predominantly from the right. It comes from the left as well, but it is not evenly distributed. I grew up in the 1960s when the threat was predominantly from the left. The point is that leaders from the, if you will, side where the threat comes from have to be part of causing that threat to diminish.
And the first opportunity that we will look for is this week at the Republican National Convention. We'll have an opportunity to see what the speeches are like, what calls for nonviolence, for an end to political violence might come from that convention. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Garen Wintemute. He's the director of the California Firearm Violence Research Center based at UC Davis. Dr. Wintemute, let's talk more about your group's research. The Violence Prevention Research Program at UC Davis has conducted large annual surveys on political violence. How have these surveys been conducted, and what's the goal of this research?
Sure. Let me reverse that. The goal of the research is to understand how common support for political violence is, how common willingness to commit it is, and again, a health problem. We want to know what groups are at highest risk for engaging in this behavior, because having that kind of basic information can help us prevent political violence. So with that in mind, beginning in 2022, as you said, we started what's called a longitudinal survey. We are surveying the same people over and over, year after year. It's a big survey. There were more than 12,000 people in it at the beginning. It's what's called a nationally representative sample. So our survey results can be taken to accurately reflect the sense of the nation, adults in the nation, at the time the survey was done. In 2022, we found that a third of Americans thought political violence was justified, at least sometimes. Importantly, support fell from 22 to 23. 23 wasn't an election year, but it fell to about 25%. And I'll say in 2024, we just got the data back. I've just been looking at some raw counts. And so I don't have proportions that I'm comfortable talking about, but we're not seeing a rebound. We're not seeing nationwide a resurgence of support for political violence in this election year. So people need to understand as they calibrate, what should I think about political violence? Other people aren't supporting it, so why should I?
So you're seeing sort of support sort of bounce up and then down. It's certainly good to hear that the trends, at least for 2024, may not be as much of an acceptance of the idea of political violence as 22. But are you also looking at the demographics of these individuals and getting a sense of who might either support or reject the idea of political violence?
Yes. So again, as context, the remarks I made a moment ago about where the threat has come from. So no surprise, men more than women, young people more than old people, because young people are more prone to violence in general. It's an age phenomenon. Republicans more than Democrats, MAGA Republicans more than other Republicans. This won't surprise anybody, people who endorse racism and sexism and homophobia, transphobia, xenophobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, all of those things. People who endorse white supremacy, the QAnon delusion, Christian nationalism. All of those groups of people have told us that they are supportive of political violence and willing to engage in it at rates higher than the rest of the population is. We had a particular interest in firearm owners, given our background. And on balance, firearm owners were not more supportive of political violence. They were technically, but by quite a small margin. But it changed. The groups that were more supportive among gun owners were people who owned assault type rifles, people who had bought guns during the pandemic, and people who carried guns out in public all the time.
Dr. Windmute, earlier you talked about the implications for your industry, the medical industry, should political violence expand. What about for either local, state, or national law enforcement agencies? What should they be doing or thinking about or preparing to do, given that, you know, we seem to be seeing more of this in our country?
Yep. They are thinking and doing and preparing. And I know that because from time to time I've been involved. The fundamental realization, as with mass shootings, is to understand there's no such thing as an it can't happen here place. So agencies across the country have been thinking and preparing for the possibility that that this could be the flavor that mass violence takes in their community on any given day. Very, very importantly, agencies at all levels of government are working hard to prevent this from happening to the extent that the tools are available, using tools to identify people who are at high risk so that they can make contact with those people if need be, try and assess the risk, try and divert somebody who might be thinking about doing violence from taking a vague plan into something specific and then committing it.
You know, in our last minute or so, you know, we've talked here this afternoon about a lot of things that seemingly are out of the control of the average person, an assassination attempt on the other side of the country. But when I read your recent opinion piece in thehill.com, you did have some words of encouragement for people, some advice on how everyone can help this situation. What can people do?
Sure. Again, fundamental understanding. None of us has the luxury of seeing ourselves as a spectator at a train wreck. We are all on the train. All of us have a job to do here. Declaring our opposition to violence to those we know, because as you and I have talked about, in the aggregate, those declarations have an effect. Another one, this will come to few of us, but it will come. People listening to us talk are going to be in a position to they will have heard about a threat or they'll see it on social media. They have got to communicate that information to people who can do something about the threat so that it doesn't become a reality. I think fundamentally for all of us, Chris, we face a question. Are we going to be a country where political violence shapes our future? And the proper answer to that question for each and every one of us is not if I can help it.
Well, Garen, thank you for your words of advice and helping us understand this topic better. I appreciate it.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Garen Wintmute is the director of the California Firearm Violence Research Center at UC Davis and a distinguished professor of emergency medicine. We've been talking about political violence in the United States and the implication of this weekend's assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. And just a note, after the assassination attempt, Governor Gavin Newsom announced that California will deploy law enforcement officers to support the Republican National Convention taking place this week in Milwaukee. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Chris Nichols.